Holding good. Aleph, I'm going to Aleph, the third line. Still talking about Dinim of Chol HaMoed. We talked about in the Mishnah that there were certain things that you were allowed to do in terms of building or setting up ovens and millstones and things like that. So we talked about, is it that you're allowed to do them without a shinui because they're things that are needed for melechas eichel nefesh? Or are we talking about that these are maybe some things are allowed and some maybe only things that are amateur work but not professional work? So more on that topic. The Gemara says, Rav Shorel Chia Bar Ashi Migdal Uichri B'chol HaDemoyada. Rav gave a heter to Chia Bar Ashi to weave oichri, which are a kind of net that they use to, or a kind of net or trap that they use to catch fish. So they would weave them out of ropes or lulav leaves or what have you. So he allowed him to the migdal oichri b'cholam d'moyada to weave these kinds of fish nets on or fish traps on chalamoyed. My time and my sehedya too, because these are unprofessional kinds of things. These are things that any amateur could easily weave together. Aval easily also, but he did not. But he said on the other hand, easily, which are nets that are used to trap birds, which are more professionally made, also then that's also on Chol HaMoed, my time and my se'uman, because those things are professionally made, and for that you would have to at best do it with a shinui. Another one, Rav Yehuda Shori La Ami Tanura. Rav Yehuda gave a heter to Ami, the oven maker or person who used to watch ovens, whatever, somebody whose business involved ovens. He allowed him L'migdal Tanuri. He allowed him to make ovens on Chol HaMoed. Again, L'migdal literally means to weave them. How do you weave an oven? So a couple of the Rishonim explain. So Rashi just says Lasa Satanu Mechodesh to make an oven from scratch. So he allowed him to do it on Chol HaMoed. Again, the idea being because it's necessary for Oichol Nefesh and it's not really such a professional thing. A couple of the Rishonim explain that specifically the Migdal Tanura is a kind of thing where you make a framework out of, you weave together a framework out of leaves or something, then you smear it with clay, and then you fire it so the leaves burn away and you're left with something in the shape of an oven. You're left with the clay that surrounded it is now in the shape of an oven. So he allowed him to do that on Chol HaMoed. He also allowed, Rav Yehuda also allowed Rabba Bar Ispi, L'migdal Mehulta, to weave a sifter that you're going to use to sift flour. He allowed him to weave that on Chol HaMoed. So all those things, in other words, the idea is with all these things, they're all needed for Oichol Nefesh, they're all needed for food on Chol HaMoed, morning Ali. They're all needed for food, and all of them, and all of them, all the ones that we said are mutter, are all things that even an amateur could do. As opposed to the one thing we said that not was an easily were the traps for birds, where those things you need more professional work to do it. So the Gemara says, Eini, so you're telling me that Rav Yehuda, that Rav and Rav Yehuda allowed these various kinds of things, including we said that Rav Yehuda allowed somebody to make an oven on Chol HaMoed. They both agree that you're not allowed to make an oven to begin with. Now, who's that they both agree? Rashi Ksav Yad says, I'm not sure which they were referring to. Where did we have a machlokes before about ovens that we should say that now they both agree that you're not allowed to make one to begin with? So some of the mafoshim explain that we're talking about, we're referring back to our Mishnah where we had Rabbi Yehuda saying that you're not allowed to be mechabshin the millstones, and we said mechabshin can mean either to roughen up the surface or to make a hole in the middle of it. So Rav Yehuda wouldn't allow that, but they would both. So even the Tanakama, who's Mekel, would say that you can't build a new oven on Chol HaMoed. So how does Rav allow? How does Rav Yehuda allow Ami Tanura to make a new oven? And the answer is like Kasha, Kan Mi Moisa Chama, Kan Mi Moisa Gshamim. It depends whether we're talking about the summertime or the wintertime. In terms of Chol HaMoed, we mean, in other words, Pesach, when it's warmer and not raining anymore, versus Sukkot, when it's often cooler. So therefore, what happens is, during Pesach, during Chol HaMoed Pesach, if you make an oven, it'll dry out faster, because it's not raining. So therefore, you'll still be able, on Chol HaMoed itself, you'll still be able to use it to bake bread. So therefore, or if not during Chalamoy, at least during the last days of Yom Tov, whatever. The point is, in other words, that then you're doing it, you're doing something which is going to be useful on Yom Tov itself. So therefore, you'd allow it. That's why Rav Yehuda allowed this Ami Tanura to make an oven on Chol HaMoed where it could still be used on that same Yom Tov, as opposed to when we're talking about Chol HaMoed Sukkos, where it's cooler and sometimes rainier. So then that's what Rabbi Bar Shmuel's Braisa is saying, that then you can't make an oven, not because the problem is you're making in the oven per se, but because you're not making it for the purpose of Chol HaMoed, because anyway it's going to take time to dry out and be ready for use. And therefore, you can't do that. So that's the basic rule. If you can use these things on Chol HaMoed itself, then you're allowed to make them on Chol HaMoed. If not, then not. Provided that they're Maisa head yet, provided that they're not Maisa Uman, that they're not something that has to be professionally made. Okay. The Mishnah says, Oisin Maika Lagagvala Mirpesis Maisa head yet. You're allowed to make a railing around a mirpesis. So a mirpesis is a gallery that you use to go to the upstairs apartments in a building. So you have sometimes instead of a, and we've talked about it before, instead of an enclosed hallway, sometimes you have something like a hallway, but it's open on one side and the other side is alongside the building. So you need a railing on the open side so people don't fall off. So you're allowed to make a mica for a roof. Roofs in those times were flat, and they used to use them as an area to do things. And for a mepesis, you're allowed to make such railings, maisa hediot, avaloi maisa uman. Again, you're allowed to make them in an amateurish way, as we'll see in the Gemara, what that means, but not in a professional way. Now, there's an interesting point that Rishonim bring up, namely that the Sifri, when you have the mitzvah of Micah, is in a pasuk in Parashas Ki Seitzei, and the Sifri says over there that a merpeses does not in fact need a Micah. The pasuk says over there that a roof needs a Micah. We learn that that's not only a roof, but certain other kinds of areas as well where people are likely to fall off from. But the Sifri says over there that a Micah, merpeses doesn't, a gallery does not require a Micah. So what kind of mica are we talking about over here? So the Ritzvah says we're talking about that he says if we're talking about making a mica for the sake of the mitzvah, then you would be allowed to do it even professionally on Chol HaMoed because you're doing it for the sake of the mitzvah. The kind we're talking about over here is where you're making a small thing just so people don't trip and fall, but not a place where you're fulfilling the mitzvah. Because after all, it does say over there that a mepeses doesn't need a mica. On the other hand, the Me'iri brings up a possibility that maybe there's two different kinds of merpeses. The kind we're talking about over there that we're saying is potter is the kind that people don't actually use it to go up and down to their apartment. We're talking about rather ones that people use as kind of a ledge to store things or whatever. In modern Hebrew, merpeset means a porch. And in fact, so we could be talking about something more like that. They're not using it to get in and out of their apartments. They're just using it to store things or whatever. So that would be the kind that's potter, whereas over here we'd be talking about even the kind that's needed for a mitzvah. Still, the Me'iri says maybe it would mean you can't build it professionally. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Shofin as a stockin. You're allowed to rub and smooth the cracks. So Rashi says we're talking about cracks in an oven. So we just said now that you're allowed in some cases to build an oven on Chol HaMoed, so now we're saying that if you have cracks in the oven, you're allowed to rub them. You're allowed to rub them smooth, and smooth them out so they don't interfere with the baking. Some of the Rishonim argue on that, and they say if you're even allowed to build a new oven, of course you're allowed to smooth out the cracks. So rather, they explain that we're talking about cracks in a roof. So if you have cracks in your roof, then you're allowed to rub them in order to smear out the tar or whatever to prevent the roof from leaking. You're also allowed, when you have these cracks, you're allowed to not only rub them, you're allowed to roll them with a roller. So a magila is a roller, as Rashi describes, as a heavy, round piece of wood. So you roll it along there in order to close up the cracks, in order to spread out the tar or the mortar or whatever it is over there in order to smooth it out and get rid of the cracks. So you're allowed to do that. The yad of a regel, by hand or by foot, which would mean, but Rashi explains, by hand would mean that you take a piece of wood and you bang it with your hand on there to close up the cracks, or you kick on it with your foot. The Gemara is going to ask, if you're allowed to use a magila, surely you're allowed to use yad and regel, which is a less usual way of doing it. So we'll see in the Gemara what this part means. But you're not allowed to use machlotzayim for it on Chalamoid. Rashi describes a machlotzayim is a piece of wood shaped like a foot, where you press it against the plaster or the mortar in order to close up the cracks. So that is more meister uman, more even than a magila, than a roller. The Aruch explains that machlotzayim is what's called in English a trowel. It's a tool that has a handle and a flat blade. You use it, for example, sometimes you see on construction sites, you see that they're using it to smear out plaster or mortar or whatever. So that's more of a professional kind of thing than a roller or any of the other things that we described. So that you can't do on Chol HaMoed. Next, continues the Mishnah. Hatsir, the hinge of a door, the hinge pin of a door. So we talked about before that doors in the times of the Gemara were made, they weren't like nowadays where you have hinges on the side of the door. They were made, you had pins sticking out from the top and the bottom of the door that went into holes, one in the lintel of the doorway and the other one in the threshold, and the door would turn on those. So they were sort of like Lego doors. So that sear, if it breaks, that sinner, as well as also the socket where the hinge goes into, that koira, or a beam, meaning in other words, specifically the beam that you, Rashi translates it as the lintel, the beam that's above the door, which when you open and close it, when you close the door, then it bangs against that beam, and that helps keep it closed. So that, Bahamanu, and the lock of the door, v'amafteach, and the key, all of those shenishbaru, if any of those broke, misnachman mamoyed, you're allowed to fix them on Chol HaMoed, with provisions that we'll see in the Gemara. Ovrovad shalei iskaven lasis malachta mamoyed. Now, with all these things, provided that you're not specifically planning to do the work on Chol HaMoed, meaning if you had plenty of time to do the work before Yom Tov, but you thought to yourself, you know what, listen, Chol HaMoed, I'm not doing work anyway, I have plenty of time available, so I'll do this work then you're not allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. Because, that's a factor that we haven't really brought up until now. We talk about various factors when you're allowed and not allowed to do malacha on Chol HaMoed. So one of the factors is this machaven malach de lamoyed, where you're specifically planning, you know what, let me leave this for how I know I could have done this any time in the week or two before Yom Tov, but instead let me leave it for Chol HaMoed because I have time. Then the chachamim don't allow you to do it at all during Chol HaMoed, that is. And the Mishnah finishes off b'chol kvoshin shu yochol lechol mehen b'moyed, anything that you want to pickle and anything that you want to pickle or preserve or whatever, if you're still going to be able to eat from them during Chol HaMoed, Kovshan, then you're allowed to pickle them or preserve them on Chol HaMoed, because again, you're doing it for Tzorach Achila during Chol HaMoed itself. Okay. So the Gemara starts off, Heichi Domi Maisa Hegget. When we say that you're allowed to make a mica for a roof or for a mepeses, you're allowed to make Maisa Hegget. What's the definition of Maisa Hegget? So Rav Yosef Amar b'chutzah v'dafna. Rav Yosef says, like we learned previously, that it means that you use chutzah v'dafna. Chutzah are lulav leaves, dafna are laurel branches. So what you do is you weave something out of, you put together a mechitza out of laurel branches, and you weave them together with lulav leaves. That was a popular way in those times of making a temporary fence. So that would be an example. You make a temporary fence like that, and then after Chol HaMoed, you build something proper. After Yom Tov, you build something proper. The Masnisa Tana, in a Braisa, we learn an alternative, Sorbet Sorbet in a Toch Betit. Also, like we learned there, you put up bricks, you put up stones, but you don't smear mortar between them to hold them together. So again, you have a makeshift mechitza, you have a makeshift mica, but it's not permanent, and after Yom Tov, you'll make it permanent. We said in the Mishnah, Shofenes HaSadokin, we said that if you have cracks, according to Rashi, in an oven, and according to many other Rishonim, in a roof, And then we said you're allowed to rub them to close them up. We said you're allowed to roll a roller on them. But we said that, and we said, by hand and my foot. We said, but we're not allowed to do with machlatzayim. Which again, Rashi had translated machlatzayim as a piece of wood shaped like a foot, and the Aruch translates it as a trowel. So the Gemara says, Hashta b'ma'agira amrit shari, what is the Mishnah saying? If you're even allowed to use a roller, which is definitely more professional, it's going to give more professional looking results than by doing by hand and by foot, the yad of a regal maboya, should it need to be said that you need to use, that you're allowed to use your hand and your foot? If you're even allowed to use a roller, why even mention the yad of a regal? And the answer is Hachi Karma. You're right. What the Mishnah means is shofenes hasdokin. You're allowed to rub these cracks, to rub the mortar or plaster or whatever to close up the crack. Umagilan oisan. You're allowed to rub. You're allowed to roll on them ke'ein magila b'yad v'regel in a way similar to what you would do with a magila. Not that you actually use the magila. Not that you actually use the roller. But in other words, you use your hand or your foot to smooth it out the way that you sort of the way that you would with a roller. So that you're allowed to, but you're not allowed to use machlatzayim. So you're actually not allowed to use the magila at all, but you're allowed to just use your hands or feet to smooth it out the way that you would smooth it out using a magila. That's allowed, but not the way that you would smooth it out with machlatzayim, and certainly not to use the machlatzayim itself, because that's more professional work. Okay. We said hatsir vatsiner vakoda v'amano v'amateach shenishbu. We said if the hinge pin or the hinge socket or the lintel or the lock or the key of a door were broken, shenishbu, if any of those broke, mesachnen mamoyed, you're allowed to fix them on chalamoyed. So the Gemara says, Rumini, I have a contradiction. Now some of these things, the pashtos, are made out of metal. In particular, the lock and the key are made out of metal usually. And the Mishnah tells us at the end of Ma'aseh Sheni, at the end of Masechta Ma'aseh Sheni, it mentions a number of takonas that Yochanan Kohen Gadol made, and one of them is Ad Yom of Hayapatish Makiv Yerushalayim Chola. Up until his time, hammers would be banging in Yerushalayim during Chol HaMoed, and he stopped that because he said it's not the kavodik to Chol HaMoed that people are working banging with hammers. So we see, in other words, that after Yochanan Kohen Gadol's time, then you're not allowed to do now how do you fix a broken lock or a broken key? You need to take it to a blacksmith, and they need to hammer on the metal to fix it. So therefore, so we see from Yochanan Kohen Gadol's time, he was in the middle of the second Mishmikdash. So there's a good deal of discussion who this Yochanan Kohen Gadol is exactly, because there were several people who had that name. Is it the father of Matityahu? We say in Alanism, Bimei Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol. So is it that Yochanan Kohen Gadol? Is it a son of Matisyahu? Is it a grandson of Matisyahu? There's also the question whether it's the same one that we say that was Kohen Gadol for 80 years and then became a Tzduki. Whether it's the same one or not is also questionable. Anyway, the point is that up until his times, you were allowed to do blacksmithing work on Chol HaMoed, but after that, not. So Ad Yom of Ein Mikan Ve'Elachloy, only up until his time, but not afterwards. So how are you allowed to fix a broken lock or a broken key on Chol HaMoed? And the answer is, like Kasha, Kan B'Din Nagri. It depends. Are you talking about the Nagri, one that you need to take to a blacksmith, namely a metal lock or a metal key? That wouldn't be allowed on Chol HaMoed. So Kan B'Din Nagri, as opposed to when you have a wooden lock or a wooden key, Those you take to a carpenter, so that you would be allowed to have fixed on Chol HaMoed, and that's what our Mishnah is saying. Because the blacksmith, when he's banging with his hammer, it makes a tremendous amount of noise. When the carpenter does it, it doesn't really make very much noise, so therefore it would be allowed. Maskif lo Rav Chista. However, Rav Chista asks on that, what do you mean, Yomru kola rabba osir? What are people going to say? You're only also to do work that makes a lot of noise, but you're allowed to do work that makes a little bit of noise. Both of them are work. They're both professional type work that you're doing on Chol HaMoed. Why should one be mutter when the other one is also? It depends what kind of tool you're using for the purpose. They can in fact both be talking about. They can both be talking about wooden ones, for example. So one is talking about magli. Rashi translates magli as when you're using a large saw. So that doesn't make much of a noise, I guess, because the idea is a large saw, usually a large saw is the kind of thing that you would use, for example, when you're chopping down trees, or when you first chop down a tree and you're cutting it up into large logs, then you would use a masra gadol. When you're using it to fix a lock or something, obviously you're not using the full length of it, you're just kind of rubbing the lock against it in order to cut into it, so that doesn't make much noise. That doesn't really make any noise. So therefore, that would call a klum. It actually says it doesn't make any noise at all, or at least maybe not any noise that can be heard outside of the carpenter's shop. Therefore, that would be mutter. As opposed to use chatsini when you're using an axe to fix it, that you can hear the sound of the blows of the axe. So that would be also. But different mafoshim talk about different possibilities exactly what magli and chatsini are, but that's the point. In other words, we're talking about whether it actually makes noise or whether it doesn't. Rapapa, amar kan kodim gzera, kan lacha gzera. Rapapa says very simple. Our Mishnah is talking about before Yochanan Kohen Gadol gzera. And even though now Rebbe who composed Mishnayos lived a couple hundred years after Yochanan Kohen Gadol, we often have Mishnah lezazam in Kaima. We often have that once a Mishnah was composed with a certain text, then it remains that way even when things change. So our Mishnah would be talking about before Yochanan Kohen Gadol's time, that then there was no restriction on fixing locks and keys during Chol HaMoed. After, where's the Mishnah at the end of Ma'aseh Sheni? Kama Achav Zera, talking about after Yochanan Kohen Gadol Zera. Rav Ashi gives yet another answer. Har Rav Yehuda, Har Rav Yosi. It depends whether we're talking about according to Rav Yehuda or according to Rav Yosi. In the next parak, we're going to talk about what happens when you're doing malacha for davar ha'avod. You have a situation where you're going to have a major loss if you don't do this malacha. The question is going to be, which we're going to discuss in the next parak, do you need in that case to make a shinui when you're doing the malacha? Do we say, okay, the chachamim are allowing you to do it because otherwise you're going to suffer a major loss, but nevertheless you have to do it with some kind of shinui? That's Rabbi Huda's opinion. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi holds that in a case of davar avod, you don't have to make any kind of shinui at all. So therefore, our Mishnah would be according to Rabbi Yossi. The Mishnah in Ma'aseh Sheni, talking about Yochanan Kohen Gadol's Takana, would be according to Rabbi Huda, that even when you're allowed to do it, you would have to do it with a shinui. As in fact, Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi says, "Man Tana Shini Gemoyed B'Davar Avod." Which Tana is it that says that when you're doing work for a Davar Avod on Chol HaMoed, you need to make a shinui in it? That would be Deloik Rav Yosi. That would be not like Rav Yosi, because Rav Yosi would say that you don't need to. There's a different way that some of the Rishonim have to parse the sentence. There's a mafodish called Shita on Masech the Moed Cotton. We don't know who the author of it is, but it's one of the Rishonim. So he parses the sentence a little differently. Man Tana Shini B'Moed B'Davar Ovid Deloy, which Tana would be that say that you don't need to make a Shinui on Chol HaMoed when it comes to a Davar Ovid? That would be Rabbi Yosi. That would be according to Rabbi Yosi's opinion, because Rabbi Yehuda would require you to make a Shinui. Anyway, the point is that, so our Mishnah that says that you're allowed to fix them without putting any conditions on it would be according to Rabbi Yosi. So yes, Yochanan Kohen Gadol made a takana not to use hammers, that blacksmiths shouldn't be banging their hammers on Chol HaMoed, but that's talking about when we're not dealing with a davar avod. When it's a davar avod, you're allowed to. And the example, so when your lock is broken or your key is broken and you'd have to leave the door open, that's a real example of davar avod. If you do that, then your house is going to get broken into. So therefore, you're allowed to do it. And Rabbi Yosi would say you're even allowed to do it without a shinui. So Omer Rabina, so in this connection, Rabina says, Kiman madlinen ha'idna tabyusa didasha b'chula demayada. Which opinion do we follow nowadays? When we lift up, madlinen means to lift up, kabyusa didasha, the beam above the doorway. So Rashi describes, sometimes you have that beam has nails sticking out of it, so you lift it up and fix it, in order that the door will close properly. So which opinion says that would be mutter? Command to Rabbi Yosi, that would be like Rabbi Yosi, that when there's a davar avod, you're allowed to. And again, here, where your door won't close properly because of those nails, then it's a davar avod, therefore Rabbi Yosi would allow you to do it on Chol HaMoed, without a shinui. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Kvashin shu yachol lecha b'moed kaipshan, we said that anything that you want to pickle or preserve, if there's still going to be time during Chol HaMoed to eat the results of it. Then you're allowed to pickle them on Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara gives an example of a case. Bedissa Laboy Kavri. Bedissa is the name of a river. You have the city of Pum Bedissa in Bavel. Pum actually means the mouth. So the city was called Pum Bedissa because it was by the mouth of the river Bedissa. So one time, Bedissa, the body cavity, one time Bedissa left over a lot of fish. And Rashi over here says Lavoi means Shem Makim, means the name of a place, although the Rashash says that might be a mistake, that might be a Torah Sofer in Rashi. The Ritva explains that it means essentially the Bedissa left a lot of fish stranded. So the Rashi explains that they drained the river, they made a way for the river to drain, and therefore a lot of fish were left over that had been stranded, that the water drained away and there were a lot of fish left. Also, Kula Amot Sud, so everybody went to catch some of these fish, to take some of these fish for themselves, Isu Kavra, and they brought back a bunch of fish. So Rava told the people, you can go ahead and salt them. Now this took place during Chol HaMoed. Rava tells the people, good, you're allowed to go and salt these, fish on Chol HaMoed. Omele Abayas. Abayas says, how could they do that? Only if you're able to eat from what you pickled on Chol HaMoed will you be allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. Here, it's going to take time for these fish to be ready. So it's not going to be ready by the end of Yom Tov. So how are you allowing them to do that? Omale, so Rava tells him, Kiven de mi ikra daita da achila aisinu, since to begin with they collected the fish because they planned to eat them, the e shovet lahu pasti, and if they were to leave the fish unsalted, they would spoil. Well then, kiprak matya ha of a dummy, vishori, then it's considered like the case that we talked about, yesterday on Yodom and Bay, where you have a merchandise, a business deal that's going to get lost if you don't do it on Chol HaMoed. For example, we said you're going to lose money on the deal. And then, since the thing is mutter, so by the same token here, since they were allowed to collect the fish lahatchila, then once they have them, then they're allowed to salt all of them, even if they're not going to be able to eat them during Chol HaMoed. That's one version of the story. The Ikadamri, another version of the story goes, Shari Lahu Rava Meitzad Mezel Aisuya Yimimlach. Not only, so Rava allowed them to begin with to go and collect as many of the fish as they could and then go and bring them back home and salt them. So Omale Abaya Vahanan Kvashim Shu Yochel Lechem Mehen Kvashim. Didn't we say in the Mishnah that only if you're able to eat from them during Chol HaMoed? So in other words, in the first version, there wasn't even necessary a heter for them to collect the fish. All Rava gave them a heter for was to salt the fish. Now he's actually allowing them to go to begin with to collect as many fish as possible and to go and salt them. So Abaya asks him then, so what about this Kvashim Shu Yochel Lechem Mehen Kvashim? So now you can't answer like in the first answer that it's like Kratmatia, that it's like Gavra Ovud, because to begin with, it didn't belong to them. To begin with, you're allowing them to even go and collect more fish than they know they're going to be able to eat on Chol HaMoed. How is such a thing allowed? Omale, and Rava answers him, Hani Nami Misachli Agav Ikta. Actually, even these fish could be eaten if you press them out. In other words, what you do is, so you salt them to keep them from spoiling. Now, ordinarily, you would have to leave them in the salt for quite a long time, and then, in other words, by that time, Yom Tov is going to be over. But what you could do, if you really wanted to eat them sooner, is you squeeze out the salt from them and rinse them, and maybe repeat that process several times, and eventually the fish become, at that point, in other words, the fish become edible enough from the salt that then you can eat them. So therefore, Rava tells him, so now that's why in the second version I gave them a heter to actually collect as many fish as possible, because at that point then they could conceivably go and eat much of that fish on Chol HaMoed. And actually, Mefoshim explained, now you have like this, when it comes even to Yom Tov, you have, we learned in the Masechta Beitza a while back, that, for example, you're allowed to salt meat on Yom Tov, And then you can say, for example, I salted this piece, and then you say, you know what, I don't want to eat this piece, I want to eat a different piece, and salt the next one, and so forth, and you're allowed to do that. So all the more so during Chol HaMoed. So therefore, on Chol HaMoed, you can have, they can be saying, they'll salt this particular one, and say, you know what, afterwards, I plan to do itzitza, I plan to then wring out the salt from it, and rinse it, and be able to eat it on Chol HaMoed. And then you say to yourself, you know what, I changed my mind. I don't want this one. I want the next one. And do the same thing with the next one. And thus you're able to preserve all of that. So the Gemara gives an example. Ki hodesh Shmuel Abdullahu shitin itzitiva ochel. As we have the example where with Shmuel, they one time prepared for him fish that way, where they squeezed out the salt and rinsed it and resalted it and squeezed it out again 60 times. 60 in the Gemara doesn't always mean literally 60, just means a large number of times. But in other words, we see that you can do that. It's possible to have fish that's like that, where it's still raw. You haven't even cooked it yet, but the result, you salted it, then you squeezed out the salt, then you salted it again, squeezed out the salt, and rinsed it in between or whatever, and you do that enough times, and it becomes edible, so therefore you have something that you're able to eat on Chol HaMoed, therefore you're allowed to do that. Another example, where we see that you're able to eat fish that was prepared like that, Rav Ikla Lebei Rav Shafir, Rav one time on Chol HaMoed visited the house of Rav Shafir, Aisul Kamaywa Hu Kavra, they brought in front of Rava and in front of Rav Shafir, a fish, tilta bishula, one third of it had been cooked properly, tilta milcha, one third of it had been salted and then squeezed out, like we just described, the tilta tavia, and one third of it had been roasted. So maybe we mean it's all one fish, where they prepared different parts of it in different ways, or maybe we mean it was different fish, but whatever, they had all of those in front of them. Omar Rab, so we see, in other words, so we see that you're able to eat such fish where you did itza, like we just said, where you salt it and then squeeze out the salt and rinse it out and repeat that as many times as necessary, and such a thing is edible also, because we see that they served it to Rab. Omar Rab, so in this connection, Rab says some advice about eating fish. Omali Ada Tsaida. Ada, the trapper who used to trap fish for a living, so he told me, Kavra somuch l'mischuchei mali. A fish is best to eat when it's close to spoiling. In other words, you have there's a fish when it's first caught, and then you have after a while where the fish has been sitting out. It's not yet spoiled, but you leave it out much longer. It's going to. So this Ada Tsaida, says Rab, told me that actually that's the best time to eat the fish. Tosfos, in that case, points out that no, we don't do that nowadays. We don't eat fish when it's close to spoiling. We consider that to be very dangerous. So that, plus a couple of other things that we're going to have in the Gemara over here, Tosfos says maybe this is one of those examples of Mishtanu Ativin. Maybe people's natures and the nature of certain foods is different than it was in the time of the Gemara, because we live in a different climate, we live in different circumstances, etc., and therefore things that were good in the times of the Gemara are not necessarily good now. Nowadays, we try to have our fish as fresh as possible. Although Tosfos says another possibility is that maybe kavra, that we're talking about in the Gemara over here, maybe kavra, we usually translate kavra as a generic word for fish. Maybe not. Maybe it means a particular species of fish, which that kind we're saying is best eaten when it's already older rather than when you first caught it. Maybe different fish are different in that regard, Tosfos says. There are some of the Rishonim who have a different explanation of the Somoch L'Mischuchei Mali, the Rosh, and some other Rishonim, learn that what it means is the part of the fish closest to its anus, to the part where it expels its waste, is the best and tastiest part of the fish. Or variation on that is the part of the fish closest to its bnei me'ayim, closest to its kishkis, is the best part of the fish. So not talking about how long it was since the fish was caught, but talking about what part of the fish's body is the tastiest. Okay, but Omar Rav, also Rav says, Omali Ada Tsaida, also this Ada, the trapper, told the fish trapper, told me, Kavra Tavia Ba'achua, when you're eating roasted fish, you should roast it with salt. Salt is, Achua literally means its brother. Now, so what do we have? Hashem created the fish out of the water. And the salt also comes from the water. So therefore, in that sense, fish and salt, metaphorically, are both brothers because they both come from the water. So when you're eating roasted fish, it's good to eat it with achua, with brother, namely salt. Asuke bavua. Then, after you roasted it and salted it, then you should finish up the preparation of it by putting it in its father, namely putting it in water. When you're eating it, it's best eaten dipped in its child. What's a child means when you have the fish, you have fish juice that comes out of it, which is called sir. And so what you do is you dip it in sir, which comes from the fish, and therefore it can be called the child of a fish. So you eat it that way, and ishte ale avuha, and together with it drink its father, which again, its father means the fish were created from water, so drink water together with it. So in other words, the way the recipe that Ada Saida is recommending is you roast the fish, first you salt it, then you wash it off in water, then when you're eating it, you dip it in fish juice, and afterwards you finish off with a drink of water. Maosho refers to a Gemara that says elsewhere, for example, a Gemara in Bava Basra that says that salted fish tastes much better than salted meat, because again, fish and salt both have a commonality between them. They both come from the water, whereas animal meat does not. Animal meat Hashem created from the ground, so therefore it has less affinity with salt. So therefore fish and salt have more of an affinity for each other, and therefore it comes out better that way. But Omar Rav, also Rav says, Omar the Ada Saida, Ada the trapper told me, Kavra Tachli Bachalova, when you're eating fish, or specific, whether kavra means generically fish, or like Tosfos says, maybe it means a particular type of fish. Tachli, which is cress, which is a type of plant, a type of vegetable that has a peppery taste. They used to eat it as a condiment in the times of the Gemara. Bachalva and milk, all of those things, litta and gufa, below litta and puya. Better that your body should carry them rather than that your bed should carry them. In other words, don't go to sleep right after you eating them, because they're heavy food. The better your body should bear the burden of them, and you'll walk around a bit or do something else, and then that way they'll digest properly. But Omer Rav, Omer the Ada Saida, another thing that Ada the trapper told Rav, Kavra, Tachli, Bachalva, all these three things, fish, cress, and milk, all of them, afterwards, Maya Vele Shichra, better to drink water after them rather than to drink beer. And if you don't have any water, shichra lechamra, then the next best thing, drink beer, but under no circumstances drink wine after them. Okay, so on a pshat level, these are all various pieces of health advice, since the Rambam writes in Hilchos Dei, it says, Yoyis aguf bori v'shalim, midachei Hashem, keeping your body healthy is part of the ways of Hashem, because you can't serve Hashem when you're not feeling well. So therefore, here and there, the Gemara has health advice sprinkled in, so this is one example of that. They also have, of course, deeper meanings as well. Hadron alach maskin beis hashochin. Next perek, we're continuing on dinim of chol hamoed. So the Meiri sums up. It's going to be a short perek. It only runs from Yud Aleph Amud Beis until Yud Dalet Amud Beis, or till rather Yud Gimel Amud Beis. So it's a fairly short paragraph, but in this paragraph we're going to be talking about the Meiri says four major things. Number one, cases where you're allowed to do malacha because of davar avod, which we've already been talking about a bit. Number two, where there's not davar avod, but you're allowed to, but you have a concern of davar avod. The third one is a reasonable concern, a reasonable, well-founded concern. The third one is with neither of the above. But you need the workers themselves need money. The workers themselves, you're hiring them because they don't have food. They don't have money or food for Chalamayid. So therefore, you have cases where you're allowed to have them do work for you on Chalamayid in order to earn some money. And the fourth thing that the parak is going to talk about is certain kinds of malachas that you're allowed to do on Chalamayid. So the Mishnah starts off, Misha Hofach HaZesav, if a person turned over his olives. Now, the way they used to do it in those days was they'd harvest the olives, they'd put them in a maton, which is a big container, and they'd sit there for a while and they'd soften. They're all together in the container over there, so the juice would be oozing out from them on each other, and gradually they would soften. So that way, when you're pressing them, you'll get much more oil out of them. Eventually, then you would turn them over so they all get softened evenly, and then you would take them and you'd bring them to the olive press and start pressing them. Now, once you turn them over, if you leave them for too long, then they're going to start getting moldy. So therefore, so now you're talking about a case of double oven. So you did that, the iroi ezel, and now he became an ovel, which, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, during the time of Avelus, an ovel is not allowed to do malacha. So the first case actually explains, as we're talking about, that the Avelus, nothing to do with Yom Tov per se, we're talking about some other time during the year, he ended up that in Avelus after he had turned over these olives. When now, if he leaves them for the whole Shiva, then they're going to get moldy. The second case, Oynes, and the rest of it is talking about in relation to Chol HaMoed. Some of the Rishonim learn that actually Avel is also in relation to Chol HaMoed, in other words, that he intended to do, that he intended to finish it up before Yom Tov. Then he became an Avel, and now, from Avelus, he went straight into Yom Tov, and therefore he didn't have a chance to do the Malacha before Chol HaMoed. So Oynes, or there was some other kind of Oynes that prevented him from being able to finish them before Chol HaMoed, before Yom Tov. Or another example would be that workers misled him. He hired some people to do the work, and then they backed down on him. They didn't end up showing up. Which the Ritzvah points out, the chiddush of that last one is, we don't say that, okay, maybe they're striking for higher wages, maybe he should be obligated, rather than doing the work on Chol HaMoed, maybe we should obligate him to go and offer those workers higher wages to come back. We're saying, no, he doesn't necessarily have to do that. It's considered an onus, therefore, toyen koyer shayna, therefore, he's allowed to put the first beam on them, meaning, in other words, so what they would do is once they have the olives softened and whatever, they would put them in a big pile with a netting around them to keep them from rolling away, and then they would press them with a heavy beam, and then they would do that several times to extract as much oil as possible from them. So you're allowed on Chol HaMoed to do that first press of the beam, because otherwise you're going to have a big hefsek. Umanichal achar HaMoed, and then you leave the rest of it till after Chol HaMoed. You don't squeeze any more out, because at that point you don't really have a hefsek merubah anymore. At that point, you've gotten out most of the oil out of them. If they end up spoiling, then okay, you don't have such a big loss. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you don't need that. Zoylik, you can collect all of the oil. Rashi says that the word zoylif means when you're pouring something. So you're allowed to pour out. In other words, you're allowed to press out the whole thing. The Rambam explains that zoylif actually means to collect it. So you're allowed to collect all the oil in containers. The goymer, and you finish up the job normally. The goch kedarkei, and you can then put them in barrels and seal up the barrels in the normal way. Rashi Ksavyad brings two possibilities that maybe we shouldn't have the gears. One of them is maybe we shouldn't have the gears of a gof in our Mishnah, because why should you need to seal up the barrels? It should be enough. You put the oil into barrels. That's good enough. Now at that point, that'll keep it from spoiling. Why should you be allowed to do any more malacha than that on Chol HaMoed? On the other hand, Tosfos says that maybe not. What it is that on the one hand, maybe we could say that, yeah, it is enough to put a cover on them. Maybe, in fact, for that reason, you shouldn't have the wood with golf. On the other hand, maybe the point is that oil will spoil more easily if you don't have it in a sealed container, and therefore you'd actually be allowed to seal it. Therefore, we would have the wood with golf in the Mishnah. Anyway, so Rabbi Yossi is allowing, again, that even that as long as there's hefset involved, even if it's not hefset merubah, then you're allowed to do it normally on Chol HaMoed. Again, in these cases where he couldn't have done it before because there was an oynes or because his workers didn't show up or whatever. So the Gemara says, Pasach ba'ovel v'siyah memoyed. We started by talking about a case where a person became an ovel, and then it continues talking about what happens on Chol HaMoed. First we say, Misha hofach hazeis of the irei evil, and it doesn't say what he's allowed to do like that. Then it continues that he starts the job of pressing it out and leaves it until after Chol HaMoed. In other words, it doesn't seem to be continuing on the topic of, so what happens as far as the Avelus? Do we say the same thing, that he's allowed to do it during his Avelus and then continue it afterwards or not? Omer of Shisha B'rei D'Ravidi, Zoy Sei Meretz, you see from this, Dvorim HaMutorim B'Moed Asurim M'Me'Evoy, even certain things that are allowed during Chol HaMoed are also during Avelus. In fact, he would not be allowed to put on even that first press of the olive press, of the olive press bean, he would not be allowed to do that during Avelus. Because you're not allowed to do Malacha during, because you're not allowed to do Malacha during Avelus, even things that you're allowed to on Chol HaMoed. Now what would be a reason to be more Machmir? So one reason would be the Rosh points out that Chol HaMoed nobody's allowed to. Actually, that really belongs to the next one. Okay, so Rav Shishi Brei D'Ravidi is saying you're not allowed to do work doing Avelus because it's going to distract you from your Avelus. On the other hand, Rav Ashi, I'm a loy meboya kama. Rav Ashi says, on the contrary, the Mishnah is telling us one of these things, needless to say. Loy meboya bimei evloy d'midirabon and hu v'shori. Needless to say, during days of Avelos, the whole concept of Avelos is only Dirabanan. Okay, there are places where it seems that maybe the first days of Avelos is Daraisa, but the rest of it, the rest of the 7 days, are definitely Dirabanan. So therefore, needless to say that then it would be Vishori. You'd be allowed to do this work afterwards where there's going to be Hepsi. Ela Filibamoyed, even on Chol HaMoed, the Isser Malacha Midaraisa, where the Isser of Malacha on Chol HaMoed is Daraisa. Now, we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, it's not necessarily so simple. We mentioned a few different opinions of Rishonim on this topic. Does it mean that really the Isser is Daraisa, which the Gemara and Chagiga brings a positive on that subject? Or do we mean that all the details we've been talking about so far, what's also and what's mutter, is mostly Daraisa? Do we mean, maybe Tosfos says at the beginning of the Masechta, what it means is that the basic idea that Malacha is also on Chol HaMoed is Daraisa, but it's left up to the Chachamim to determine what's also and what's mutter, so therefore we'd still say it's Daraisa. Or there's another, some of the Rishonim, we said, learn that the whole concept of not doing Malacha on Chol HaMoed is Dirabanan. They would understand Daraisa, meaning over here, because you have an asmachta, they learn that the pasuk that Gemara quotes in Chagiga is only an asmachta, and after all, it is based on the idea that you're not allowed to do that, that the Torah calls those days mikra kodesh, so there's a certain hint, there's a certain support in the pasuk for the concept of not doing malacha on Chol HaMoed, and therefore the Gemara will be calling it daraisa, even though those opinions hold that it's truly dirabanan. Anyway, so even on Chol HaMoed, we would daraisa, or new daraisa, or whatever, v'mkoim pseida shorah rabbanan, still we would say that where there's a hefset involved, the Chachamim would allow it to put on the first Torah. So according to Rav Shisha Brei of Idi, you're not allowed to do malacha even during Avelus, even the kind of thing that you would have been allowed to do during Chol HaMoed. Now, what's a reason to be machmir is the Rosh talks about that after all, during Avelus, you yourself can't do the work, but other people could, as opposed to during Chol HaMoed, nobody can do it. So that might be a reason to be more machmir, to be more stringent during Avelus, because you could have other people do it, for example, or another point that Tosfos says later is precisely because Avelus is completely Dirabanan, therefore the Chachamim sometimes want to strengthen their Xeris and their Chakonis even more than the parallel things Daraisa. So therefore they would be putting restrictions on Avelus that maybe you don't even have on Chol HaMoed. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tanya Kavaseh of Shisha Breidir of Idi. We learn a Braisa like of Shisha Breidir of Idi's understanding. The Braisa says, Eilu Dvorim Ha'oisin La'ovol Mimei Evloi. The following things you're allowed to do for an oval during the time of his Avelos, so other people can do it for him, but he himself can't do it. If his olives were already turned over, and as we said, if you leave them for too long, they're going to spoil, then they're allowed to put it under the beam in order to the decoder to shine, and the first pressing to get out the olives, to get out the oil. So that's like Rav Shisha Brei D'Ravidi that says that even though on Chol HaMoed you would have a heter to do it yourself, but during Avelos you would not. So that's one. The kadoy loguf. Another one would be if he has a jug or barrel that needs to be sealed shut because otherwise the contents of it, the wine or the oil or whatever in it, is going to spoil. So other people. people are allowed to do it for him. Tosfos brings another gusa, not kadoi, but boile logwolf. He has a pit full of wine or oil or whatever, which needs to be sealed shut. So whatever, other people can do it for him. If he has flax that's soaking and it needs to be taken out of the water that was soaking in, again, if you leave it for too long in there, it's going to spoil. So it's a davar avod. But samre lahalas min ayoda, if he had wool that was in the vat, in the dyeing vat, getting dyed a color, and again, you leave it in there too long, it's going to get ruined. So all those kinds of things, the Braita says, you're allowed to do for an ovel during the time of his avelos, but the ovel himself is not allowed to do it. Even though these things are davar avod, he has to find somebody else to do it. Also, umabitzim sadehu, also they're allowed to sprinkle his field with water, mishatagia, onas hamayim shaloi, once it comes time to sprinkle it, once it comes time to water it. So Rashi explains, we're talking about a situation where the people who have fields near each other, and say they have all the owners of fields in the same valley, they would have a rotation where each one gets the water to water their field on a certain day. So that's an example of davar avod, because we're not talking about, in other words, the problem is not that if you don't water the field, it's going to dry out. We're talking about if you don't water when it's your turn, you're losing the use of that water. So then, again, so you're allowed to do that for him during his time, at the time of his avelos, but he can't do it himself. Continues the Braita, so Rabbi Yehuda emach zorin lo sdenir. Rabbi Yehuda says also, if he has a field that was plowed but not yet planted, you would be allowed to plant that field on Chol HaMoed. During his avelos, that would also be considered, Rabbi Yehuda says, a loss, because if you don't plant it in the time when it's supposed to, and you have to wait a week until Shiva is over, then it's not going to grow well. The sada haymedes lepishtan, and also, if you have a field that's meant for growing flax, and if he doesn't plant it now, then it's going to be past the season. So Rabbi Yehuda says you would be allowed to do such things for the oval as well. Omru loy, but the Chachamim said those two we don't agree on. If he has a plowed field, fine. Im loy tizara b'bachu, tizara b'ofal. So fine, he's not planting the uri planting. There's always a later planting. There's a later time when he could plant, so just wait till after Shiva, and then he does it himself. When we hire his workers, don't do work for him during his avelos. That's not strictly necessary. All the things we mentioned till now, where his olives need to be pressed, or his barrel needs to be sealed up, or whatever, all those things, you wait till after Shiva, then there's going to be a big loss. But a field that was plowed, the Chacham say to Rabbi Yehuda, no, I mean, just wait a week, and you'll plant it then, big deals, as it is, some people plant early, or some people plant it later. And similarly, you're worried about that he's going to miss the window of opportunity to plant pishtan, to plant flax. Fine, so I'll plant another crop. There's no big deal. There's not such a hefsid involved there that we should allow him to have other people do the malacha for him. And the Braita continues, Reb Shimon Gamliel, Zeisav hafuchin ve'en sham umen elohu. What if his olives were turned over and there's nobody expert, there's nobody available to press them except for him, the oval himself? Or kadoi logu fein sham umen alahu. What if, again, he has a barrel, or as Tosfos said, boire, a pit, that needs to be sealed up, and he's the only one who knows how to do it? Pishtane lahalas min amishra v'tsamre lahalas min ayora. What if he has flax that's soaking, or wool that's in the vat being dyed, fein sham umen alahu, and the only one who knows how to do it is the oval himself. Then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says he can do it in private. He can't do it in public, but because otherwise he's going to have a hefsid, then therefore he'd be allowed to do it in private, says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So in other words, Tosfos says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel agrees with the basic idea that we're expressing in this braisa, which is the opinion of Rav Shisha Brei de Rav Idi, that an oval is not allowed to do such work during his avelos. But he's saying that if there's nobody else other than him, then you'd be allowed to do it, betzina. Then you'd be allowed to do it in private. And the braisa continues, yes, it alkein omer Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Furthermore, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, "Im haya umen l'rabim." What if this person who's now in avelos is a professional who does work for the public? So for example, he's the one person in town who knows how to do these things. And he becomes an oval, the sapper, or he's a hair cutter, or balan, or he's a bathhouse attendant, l'rabim. for the rabbin, the higia esa regel, and it comes, so okay, we're not talking about chalamoyed, we're not talking about avelus anymore. Now we're talking about chalamoyed. And now it's tzorech rabbin, and we learned in the previous parak that tzorech rabbin is sometimes allowed during chalamoyed. So Rav Shimon Gamliel goes on to say that when it comes chalamoyed, the ein sham uman elahu, and he's the only one who knows how to do this work, or he's the only one who knows how to cut people's hair, or run the bathhouse for them, harei de yasta, then he's allowed to do it because it's tzorech rabbin. Another din, the Braisa says, ha'arisin, sharecroppers, where the arrangement is that they're going to work the field, and they're going to get a certain percentage of the crop. Vahakirin, people who rent a field, where the deal is, instead of an oris, there's a percentage, a choicher gives a fixed amount. The deal is, let's say, at the end of the season, I will give you, the balabas, 10 bushels, and the rest I can keep for myself. So an oris, in other words, the amount that he gets, and the amount that the balabas is going to get, is going to fluctuate depending on how much the field produced. A choicher is, the balabas is guaranteed a certain amount, a certain number of bushels or whatever, and then the choicher, if it's a good year, gets more, and if it's a bad year, he gets less. Or people who have kablonus on a field, which is the other way around, where the kablon is going to get a certain fixed amount as his pay, and the rest of it is going to go to the owner of the field. So all those things, harayelu yasra, harayelu mishvilan. So now we're back to avelos. So they can't do it themselves during their time of their avelos, but other people can do it for them. Hachamorin, hagamolin, vasaponin. Now, what about donkey drivers who travel from one place to another, bringing grain, bringing other merchandise? Hagamolin, and people who do the same thing with camels, vasaponin, and the same thing, people who bring with ships and bring merchandise from one place to another, harei elu lo yasu, they're not allowed to do work during the time of their avelos. Because the difference is with the oris and the choicher and the kablon, so they can have somebody else do it for them, but over here, they can't hire themselves out. This is their own work. They're getting their own pay for it, as opposed to all the other ones where we said where they're getting a certain percentage or a certain amount of the field, and it's really somebody else's field that they're working in. Here it's their own camel or their own donkey or whatever. The imahoyu muhkorin and muskorin, it's lacherim, but if they were rented out, if they were hired out or rented out to other people, harei elu yasu, then they're allowed to do the work because the other person shouldn't lose out because of that. Continues the Braisa. Schiryoim, when a person is hired by the day, when a person is hired to work for the day, afilu beiracheres lo yasa. So even in another city where people don't know that he's an ovel, he shouldn't do work. What if he has work for somebody else to do in his house? So let's say, for example, somebody hired him, let's say, to weave them a garment or something. So he's doing the work in his house. Even though it's a kablonus, where he's not getting paid by the hour, he's getting paid by the piece, lo yase, he's not allowed to do it during his avelos. So Gemara says, what do you mean, that last one, alpha pisha b'kiboilas? What do you mean, even though it's kiboilas, is a reason for him not to do it? What are you saying? And if it wasn't kiboilas, if he's being paid by the hour or by the day, then there's no chidush, then he wouldn't be able to do it. Adarab, kiboilas kididei gami. Just the opposite. When he's doing the kiboilas, is more like his own work, because he makes his own hours. He gets paid by the job rather than by the hour. So of course, if he's making his own hours, there's less of a chidush that he can't do it during his avelos. Ela ema, no, you're right. What the Braisa means is bein kiboilas, bein she'ena kiboilas, lo yasa. Whether it was kiboilas or whether or not, he's not allowed to do the work during his avelos. And the Braisa finishes off, hoisa malach, yada chayim, b'beisoi. What if it's the other way around? He hired somebody to work in his house to do a job for him, let's say, for example, to make a garment for him, lo yasu, then they're not allowed to do it during his avelos. B'vayis acha yasu, but if they're doing it in a different location, then they're allowed to do it for him during chalamoyed. So we see there's a lot of dinim in this braisa, but the point is that we saw that the ovel himself, he said, is not allowed to do malacha during his avelos, which fits with Rav Shisha Breidit of Idi's opinion, that therefore our Mishnah starts out by saying that he became an oval, even though his olives have to be pressed, then he's not allowed to do it. Now, we did have the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, who says that if he's the only one who knows how to do it, then he's allowed to do it. So there is a good deal of discussion among the Rishonim whether the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel or not. So the Gemara continues in this connection. Marian Breda Robin or Ma Breda of Acha Breda Rava. These two people, Marian the son of Robin and Mar the son of Rav Acha Breda Rava. So both of them, their fathers were among the Amoraim. So the two of them, Havala Wahau Gamla the Torah Bahadi Adadi, they had a pair of oxen that used to work together. Isra be milsta ma breder of acha breder rava. Now ma breder of acha breder rava became an oval. So therefore, during avelos, he can't work. Opaske legamle. So he removed his ox from the team, so it wouldn't do work on chalamoy. Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says, Gavra Rabba, ma breder of acha obid ochi. How could such a great person as ma breder of acha do such a thing? Why should he take his ox out of the team and cause a hefsid to the other person? Granted, he's not concerned about his own hefsid. He doesn't care that he's losing work because his ox is not doing work during Chalmoyed. Shouldn't he at least be choishish, though, that his partner, Marion, is going to suffer a loss? Why should Marion have to? Well, Tanya, didn't we just learn in the Braisa, that if a person's work was hired out or rented out to somebody else, then they're allowed to continue doing work doing his avelos. So why is he saying that the work has to cease during his avelos? The Gemara says, well, who saw Adam Choshev Shaini, Ma'ar Breder of Acha took the view that an important person like himself is also either way different because people are going to learn from him and they're going to get careless and start doing malacha during their avelos. Now, so there are Rishonim who learn on this. The Ravid, for example, learns that fine, Ma'ar Breder of Acha wants to be machmer on himself. He can't be just machmer just like that on his partner. So therefore, the explanation is that afterwards he'd have to go and compensate his partner, Marion, for the time that was lost. On the other hand, not all the Rishonim agree that he would have to do that. But therefore, you do have a din that if you have a store, for example, a store or business that was owned jointly by two people, and one of them becomes an oval, based on this Gemara, we're saying the store closes during the Avelus. Even though the other one could still keep the store running, nevertheless, we close the store during the Avelus. But so we're saying Adam Choshev Shaini, I mean, to a certain extent, people are considered an Adam Choshev nowadays because people are going to learn from each other to do things. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, on the subject of what kind of work is and isn't allowed to be done during Chol HaMoed and during Avelos.